This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're doing Program 2 on estate planning for your golden years. So if you're thinking about what am I going to do in the last few years of my life, we're going to be talking about that. And I hope those of you who are listening to us live, whether it's in the Bay Area or on the Internet at www.klw.org, I hope you will call in with your questions, and I'll give you a number in a while. My guests are David Hellman, a specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law, also in taxation law. His offices are in Marin County. My other guest is Peter Stern, a specialist also in estate planning, trust, and probate law. His offices are in Palo Alto. They are both certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which is the funder of this particular segment of the program. Additional funding for your legal rights is also made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. David and Peter, thank you very much for joining us.
Chuck, always fun to be here.
Right. It's wonderful to have you here. I have a number of questions, but I know, Peter, you wanted to communicate to people, I think, that they should have their documents in place and not under the bed or not under the mattress.
Well, under the mattress, perhaps, as long as they have been signed and somebody knows to look under the mattress.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think David would agree. I mean, one thing that we always want to have when our clients are getting ready to look at retirement, we want to make sure they've had a chance while they have the ability to think through what they would like to have happen, what they would like to do with what their property is, who they want to have in charge, what their final wishes would be about disposal of their remains, issues like that.
And is that something that should be included in one's will or in one's trust, or what do you do with it?
Well, this is all part of the same package.
Yeah.
You have normally a living trust would be in place if you have assets of some value that you want to dispose of, that perhaps you want to have someone able to manage them during your lifetime. A will would simply dispose of things after you're gone.
Yeah.
Sometimes what you want to do is have a trust with a pour-over will that coordinates with the trust.
What does that mean, a pour-over will?
Well, imagine, if you will, I read a lot on the popular media about ice bucket tests these days. I'm not quite sure what that means, but for a pour-over, you imagine your will is like a bucket in which you pour things that were not in your trust, and you scoop them up and you pour them into your trust.
I see.
So the will literally says, and for these the residue of my estate shall be delivered to the trustee of my trust for the purpose of disposing of them according to my trust. So if I have bank accounts that never quite made it in the trust, and they don't pass to anyone else because mm-hmm. they're jointly owned or they have a beneficiary name on the account, you know, then the trustee would be directed to mm-hmm. collect it. If it's under $150,000, we hope that there's less than that that has to be collected by the trustee of a trust after using the pour-over will. Mm-hmm. Then you do that with a declaration called a 13-100 declaration. That's a probate code number.
Which has to have, what, two witnesses on it?
No. Oh. It's just something that is filled out by the trustee or the person who is entitled to collect that asset after the death of the individual.
Really? I see.
40 days. 40 days later.
Let me throw out a question, David. Besides you're being a certified specialist in estate planning and taxation, you're also a specialist in taxation. If a couple who is looking in a few years regarding their golden years, and when I say golden years, if someone has been reached the age of maybe 70, 75, something like that, and you're still in fairly decent health, you anticipate you're going to live a few more years, and those, I think, would possibly be the golden years. If you have a home that you bought years ago, it's paid off, you bought it for next to nothing, it's probably worth, depending on where you are, certainly, if you're in Santa Clara County or in San Francisco, it's probably worth no less than $1 million, and that may be low. What about someone who's thinking, well, what should I do? I've got my kids. Should I stay in the home? Should I sell it? How should I deal with this? What comments do you have about that? And I know there are significant capital gains consequences if you're thinking of selling it.
Right. Well, there's a whole variety of factors involved. One is whether you're capable of staying in the home.
Mm.
Another is whether or not when you pass, your children want the home. Because if they don't want the home, it doesn't make sense to keep it just for them.
Yes.
But it also may not make a lot of sense to sell the home if there's going to be a substantial tax burden that will deplete your estate in the long run.
Let me just throw out an example. Let's say someone, and this is probably not out of the question, someone bought a home for $200,000. Let's say it's worth $1 million. That seems to be kind of the average price today, both, I believe, in Santa Clara County as well as San Francisco.
Right. The median price is up around $1 million.
Yeah. So that's a gain of $800,000. What would the tax be on that, capital gains tax,
be
on that?
If you're a married couple and you've lived in the home for and owned it for over 2 years, during the last 5 years, then you're entitled to a $500,000 exclusion from the capital gain. So assuming that you didn't put in any improvements beyond the initial purchase price, that brings you up to a total of $700,000 that's excluded, but you're paying tax on $300,000 of capital gain. Some of that will be at 15%, potentially. Some of it at 20%. Mm-hmm. There will be a 3.8% investment tax on that, for part of it, depending on when you hit the threshold. And then you also have California taxes, which, depending upon your bracket, could bring you anywhere from 9.3 up to 13.3%.
So you're getting up over 20%.
Well, you're looking at around 33 to 35% overall tax bracket, depending on how much the gain is. And if you're talking about several million dollars worth of gain,
that's enormous.
Then you're up to the 37 to 40% potential.
Enormous. What thoughts do you have about, let's say, people who have lived in a home for a long time, and they're thinking, gee, I don't want to have the responsibility of this home anymore, and I'd like to explore perhaps going into and living at a retirement community. What thoughts do you have about that? Peter, do you have some thoughts about it?
Without focusing on the tax issue. Which,
no, let's not do that. Yeah.
I would say certainly that many of my clients are doing that, by the way. I mean, they get to the point where the burden of keeping up the home, keeping up the yard, becomes difficult for them. And they go out, and in our neck of the woods, in Palo Alto, in the Mid-Peninsula area, we have many very good retirement communities. Some of them are buy-in communities, continuing care retirement communities, where the person acquires an ownership interest in a unit under varying conditions of getting paid back at the end. These are often fraught with conditions such as the one that my clients at a unit not too far from Palo Alto have imposed, where they buy in, but when they can't stay in their assisted living or in their independent living unit, they're obliged to go to assisted living. And then if they can't stay there, to the long-term care unit. Once they are out of their unit for about 90 days, I believe, and they won't be able to come back, then they actually have to sell their unit.
And we're
doing one of these sales right now, and they have no objection to it. I mean, they know that they can't go back, and there are some financial consequences for them.
Let me ask you this. Generally speaking, at least in the Palo Alto area where you practice, what, for retirement communities, what is the investment that someone has to make initially? I understand, I remember reading something about $200,000 or something like that.
Oh, well, by the way, there are communities that you do not have to buy into, that you can rent, you can go in, but rental at some of these units for a couple could be $7,500 to $11,000 a month.
Wow.
For an apartment.
Whoa.
That's with all meals, with some assistance.
Yeah.
It is less expensive than it would be in a long-term care facility, which is not a real home, of course.
How would you suggest somebody going about... Let me come back to this in just a minute, because I want to ask you, how would you suggest that somebody go about doing some research about this? All right. What I want to do, let me throw another question to you, if you don't mind. This is something that both of you discussed with me, and it was before we went on the air. Some people believe that if they prepare their estate planning documents, they're going to die pretty soon. I mean, you told me that. You told me that. There are some people who believe that. And, of course, that's not true. Not true. But there are... I hope it's not true. Peter, you're laughing at this.
We don't know these
things. We don't know. We don't know.
Beyond our control.
Right. We all are going to die sometime. That's inevitable. The issue is the timing, and that's what we have to be prepared for.
And both of you have been on this program so many times, and the idea is don't leave this to the last year or so of your life.
Right.
Do some planning and do this. One of the things that I find is very important, I'm a great believer in people educating themselves. And although NOLO, the legal publishing outfit of large paperback books, is not a funder of this program, never has been, but has been very supportive. It has a very good book, which is Estate Planning Basics, which helps people to understand a whole bunch of different things in the area of estate planning and being prepared. I think all of us have a tendency to think, boy, I don't want to face this. I don't want to prepare any kind of a will or a trust or whatever. I mean, there's probably a very good percentage of people who think that way and keep putting it off. Do you find that with your clientele, David? That they come in when they're really quite elderly?
Well, some of them, and some of them it takes 5 years to get through the process just because they're procrastinators.
Oh, my. Wow.
It takes a bit of effort. But it is important to get it done. The best idea is to do it when you're young and then modify it as things change. If you wait till you're really getting up in your golden years... your thinking process may not be as clear as it should be to do this the way you really want it done. And so that is a disadvantage and means that you probably won't get things done exactly the way that you had anticipated in the beginning.
Well, if you keep putting it off and let's say you become unclear in terms of your thinking about things, it may be that you're going to be headed toward a conservatorship.
That's right. If you've lost legal capacity, then you can't sign these estate planning documents.
And you don't want that.
No, it's to be avoided at all costs. We like to counsel our clients who are in early middle age and whose parents are the ones that we're really focusing on to try to convince them to come in while they still have the capacity. You know, when they're the ones able to control what they want, to express their opinion for who they want to be in charge, who they want to have in charge, who they want to leave their estate to. And sometimes it's necessary for the younger generation to work on their seniors. But when they get to our office, half the battle is over. I mean, they're there.
Well, that's
it's getting
good.
Them into the office. Yeah. That's the very hard thing sometimes.
How do you encourage someone to come into the office? Do you stand out on the sidewalk with a sign? I've never seen you do that, Peter.
It's mostly by word of mouth.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure.
And, you know, I give talks on incapacity and Medi-Cal, as you know.
Yes.
And often, you know, the Medi-Cal planning will lead to the estate planning part of it as well.
Yeah.
And sometimes what happens is that the younger generation realizes, my gosh, Mom is getting really old and infirm. It's not the age so much as that she's not comfortable at home anymore. She can't get around anymore. The home is a two-story house. She has to go up that steep stairway to get to the bedroom, and it's hard for her to do it. And she hasn't done any planning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that
mm-hmm.
that may trigger it.
I bet. What about holographic wills? So let's say someone has done no estate planning whatsoever. Or the will was done many, many years ago, probably should be redone, and you're going to take a flight on an airplane. What recommendation do you have to someone who has been putting off either entering or preparing a will or living trust? What recommendation do you have to that person who's about to take off on an airplane and doesn't want to leave his or her or their heirs in a situation where everything passes by intestate with no direction from any will or trust at all. David?
Yeah, I would say at least do the holographic will. The legal requirements are that it has to be on unprinted paper, so you can have lined paper or blank paper. It needs to be dated and signed at the end.
Only by the
person who's writing the will,
okay.
The testator.
No witnesses necessary.
No witnesses are necessary. You need to state your preferences. You need to make it clear that it is your last will and testament in some language like that. And then ideally you say who you want to be executor and who you want to receive the various items that you want to dispose of. And then have a residue clause that says that somebody or a group of people gets everything else.
Yeah.
So at least if you cover that much and you put it where somebody's going to see it and find it if you don't come back, you've done as much as you can.
Put it under the fruit bowl, huh? Because if the fruit spoils, it'll smell and someone will...
or on the refrigerator door.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea, yeah.
But somewhere where it's going to be found, and then you get on the airplane.
Peter... If someone all of a sudden thinks about, let's say they have a will, and they've done some planning, and maybe it's not perfect, but it's better than nothing, and all of a sudden they're thinking, gee, you know, I've got all of this stuff that I inherited from my mother, my father, I've got all of this special stuff that I've been collecting, my stamp collection, I didn't even include that either in my will or my trust. What can someone do in this kind of a situation if they're going to take off on a plane?
Well, they could do the holographic will, and they can add a clause saying that they may leave a list that is not necessarily a codicil to the will in which they are going to dispose of certain items of tangible personal property. Obviously, if they're doing it all at the last minute, the list is kind of superfluous. They can put it all in one document.
Yeah.
But that's a problem. But California now permits someone to leave a will that incorporates by reference a list, even if the list has not been signed at the time the will has been signed.
So there has to be some wording in the will, though.
The will will say, I may leave a list to be found among my possessions, and I direct my executor to implement the wishes expressed in that list.
And that will be held. That will be upheld by a court.
Well, it should be. I mean, it is valid under our law now.
All right.
And then they can list, whenever they get around to it, they can say who they want to get mom's furniture and grandma's china set or something like that.
Yeah.
They sign it and they date it. And if they change their mind, they can do another one, and the last list wins.
Or you go have the fun of crossing them off as you say, I don't like that person anymore.
I don't like that one, yeah. Can you do that? If you have a list, I want so-and-so to get my stamps, and you find I don't like that person anymore, can you cross it off and initial it on the list?
I'm not sure about that. I mean, you probably should do a new list.
Yeah, do it. By the way, everybody, do a new list.
If you do it that way, you may well have people fighting about it in court.
Oh, boy.
Although I would hope
we don't want that. We don't want. There's a lot. Aren't there a lot? A good percentage of fans, if there are a bunch of kids, or when I say several children, and the parent or parents die, is it not uncommon a certain percentage that there is squabbling, arguments between the kids?
Yes.
Is that not a frequent problem?
It is a frequent problem.
How can one as a parent try to help their kids, his or her or their kids, avoid that? Is there any way to do that?
It starts when they are very, very young.
How does that happen? What do you mean?
Well, most of the problems between children when their parents pass start from when they were kids.
I see.
And it's been something that... They've had sibling rivalries since they were very young.
So it's going to happen.
It's going to happen. So the only way to prevent it is to have children that get along well. If they don't get along well, then try to structure something in your estate plan that either forces them to cooperate by making them all in charge or being very autocratic and laying it all out, not leaving anything to chance, and then there's nothing that anybody can really object to other than, gee, Mom, I don't like what you did, but oh well.
Oh well, yeah. Do you think it's in a situation if someone sets up a living trust, let's say the surviving parent sets up a living trust and this person may have two or three kids, maybe more. Do you think it's wise to have, as your children, the trustees share the role of the trustees, or do you think it's better to have an independent person, a professional fiduciary or whatever, handle it?
Well, I would say statistically, many more of my successor trustees are children than are not, but that really depends on the family.
Yes.
You know, if we have a very large estate, it might simply be a question that the children are not really suitable to manage assets of that complexity.
Mm-hmm.
And often the children are sophisticated enough to realize it. Sometimes they will be squabbling. I generally don't see that so much in my level of
mm-hmm.
practice.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when the children might be fighting, there would be a tendency to go outside to a sibling of the parent to be the trustee in that case, rather than the children.
And then you
might always end up with the
like
problem.
Like an aunt or an uncle.
And then if the aunt or the uncle predeceases the parent, then you have a problem.
Of course.
But no, there are most parents try to set things up to avoid a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally I have parents who say, I want all of my children to be co-trustees. And I tear out what's left of my hair, and I say, well, you know, that gets kind of complex for the banks, you know, to know what, I want them all to have the ability. So,
All right.
We write it in, keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Hope they maybe go to David to administer the trust in the end, so I don't have to worry about dealing with Wells Fargo and whose instructions do we follow.
Let me ask you both this. Banks, of course, I don't know when it started, but banks can be the fiduciaries or the trustees of living trusts. What thoughts do you have on that? How significant, how positive do you think that is to consider having a bank as your trustee?
Well, I think as part of what Peter said, the size of your estate is an issue.
Yeah.
If it is large and complex, then having a trust department of a bank or a brokerage firm or some institution doing it makes sense. The positive thing is they're going to be there. They are clearly independent. The negatives are that the trust officer changes periodically, so
yes.
You don't have necessarily the continuity that you might with a family member or other person. The other negative is that you don't, with a trust company, you don't have the personal touch that a family member may have. So sometimes what people do in that circumstance is they will have a financial trustee and then a family representative or a family trustee who advises the financial.
Are they of an equal level in terms of being a trustee?
It depends.
I see.
You can segregate their responsibilities and say that they will listen in terms of the discretionary functions of the trust mm-hmm. that are going to be distributed from the financial side, that they will then listen to the family representative mm-hmm. before they make their decision. So there are lots of ways of dealing with this. But if you have a large, complex trust, then some form of an institutional trustee makes sense.
Uh-huh. Any comment for
I'll just add also that the corporate trustee will of course, be quite expensive.
Yes. Kind of a percentage? What do they charge? They don't charge a percentage of the estate, do they?
They often do.
Do they?
They do a percentage of assets under administration and insist that their fee schedule be integrated into the trust.
Mm-hmm.
If the trust goes to court, there are special rules that govern trustee fees for something that the court supervises under our California rules of court. However, the percentage, usually, of course, they won't take a trust unless mm-hmm. it is over $1 or $1.5 million.
I see.
Now, if real property in my neck of the woods is involved, that's a fairly easy threshold to
meet.
Pretty
easy, I know.
On the other hand, the children are taken aback if they learn that Mom and Dad want Wells Fargo or Bank of America to step in.
Because they feel slighted, don't they?
They feel slighted, but also they know it's going to cost them a lot more.
Yeah.
We do have an institution called the Professional Fiduciary, which you mentioned a while back.
Yes.
And these are individuals who are certified by the California Department of Consumer Affairs.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what experience David has had. The ones I've worked with have generally been pretty good.
These are individuals not connected to a bank or any kind of a specific entity. They're just individual persons who have specialized in this area.
That's right. Often they are former bank trust officers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And my experience has been good.
Has it?
Yes.
Well, that's something. That's something. And again, where can someone find them? They're certified by the Department of Consumer Affairs of the state of California.
Yeah, but if they come to the attorney, usually they won't know about looking on the Consumer Affairs website. But when they come to their estate planning attorney, and they say, well, I have a problem, Peter. I just don't know. Johnny and Sally don't get along.
Yeah.
What should we do? And it may be, well, look, here are three people that I've worked with. You can look them up on the website. Mm-hmm. You can interview them. You know, they won't charge you to come out and talk to them. Mm-hmm. Often those are decent relationships.
That's
that,
very
that
good.
Come
very,
out of
yeah,
that.
Very good.
And the local estate planning councils, which are combined of representatives of attorneys, accountants, and fiduciaries, mm-hmm. as well as financial planners, mm-hmm. That's where these people all know each other from, usually.
I see.
So most attorneys or CPAs will know private fiduciaries because they've encountered them in these groups.
This is really there's so much to do. I mean, obviously, if someone has an estate, a significant equity in a home, stocks and bonds, maybe something in the bank, you really don't want to shortcut this and try to be cheap on it. You really need to go to a lawyer. Both of you are certified specialists in estate planning. You really need to go to someone who really knows what he or she is doing.
I agree.
Don't you agree?
Absolutely.
You don't want to
yes,
you don't want to really say, well, I'll just prepare a holographic will. Right. I may have $10 million, but hey, what the heck? I'm just going
to... Although I do tell clients to look at the Nolo Press books occasionally,
do you
I
really?
Also say, you know, don't be your own lawyer and use them to fill out these things when you have a very complex situation.
And that is my approach also. I feel people should educate themselves, and I'm a great advocate of the Nolo books, and they have just a whole bunch of books, especially this one that we're talking about tonight on the program, Estate Planning. But I think it's very important that people try to educate themselves so that they know what the issues may be and what questions to ask. You don't want to, in my opinion, you don't want to go into an attorney's office and not know anything at all. This is Your Legal Rights. My guests are attorneys who have been on the program many, many times. They've been great supporters of Your Legal Rights and this station. Peter Stern and David Hellman, they're both certified specialists in estate planning, trust, and probate law. David's also a certified specialist in taxation law. I'd like you to call in. If you have some questions, some comments, some concerns, something that you would like to find out of what direction you should go at, don't be bashful. Please call us now, 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134, and let us know what your question is, what your concern is. If you feel that you are having a problem in figuring out what to do with your estate, please join us. Don't be bashful. And before we take our first call, let me just mention this. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. For a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do the best to find someone for you who's experienced for a half an hour consultation. And essentially, throughout the state of California for a half an hour, the cost will be, and it doesn't go to the lawyer, it goes to the lawyer referral service, anywhere between $25 to $35. It's a great investment. If you are looking for a certified specialist in one of the 11 fields, including estate planning, trust, and probate law, then I suggest you also contact the Board of Legal Specialization. And that number, 415-538-2100, 415-538-2100, or go to the website, www.calbar, C-A-L-B-A-R, www.ca.gov, and go to the left of your screen where it says legal specialists, and you'll find out in your community who the certified specialists are in the field that you're looking for. Okay, William, welcome to the program.
Hi. I did my will some time back, and I created a living trust at the time, and I appointed in the will my daughter as the executor, and I included a sweep clause, I think they call it, so that everything should go into the trust when I die. Subsequently, I've gotten married, and I want to, if by chance I should die before my wife, I would like to make sure that she can continue to live in the condominium that we own,
mm-hmm.
is presently owned by that living trust. So I was wondering, is there a simple way to ensure that?
Well, don't you have that in your living trust, though, William? Doesn't that? Don't you have a reference in there that you, should you predecease your wife, you want her to continue to live in the condo?
I wasn't married at the time.
Ah, okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Now
right.
I'm married.
All right.
Yeah.
Peter is ready to go. Don't leave us, William. Stay.
Okay, well, William, for one thing, you must do some new estate planning because since you have married and you do not mention your spouse in your existing documents, she would be entitled to an intestate share of your estate by law. But it seems, moreover, the right thing for you to do would be to sit down with your attorney, either with or without your spouse, to do the planning. You want to characterize what your property is, what is separate, and then since you're now married, if you're still employed, you now have community property. And perhaps you are using earnings to pay for the condominium, which is separate property, and thus blurring a little bit whether it is separate or community property. So a real first step might be to try to define what the property interests are that you have and your new wife has in what you own. And then you want to have her mentioned in your estate plan. I mean, even if you were to end up saying, I don't want her to have anything, she's a wealthy person, which you could do, and the two of you could have a prenup or a postnuptial agreement now. But you want to make sure that you do have new documents that refer to your spouse. And in those documents, you could put a clause that would say, you know, I own this condominium. It is my separate property. I wish that my spouse be allowed to continue to occupy it under whatever terms you then set up in the document.
I guess, see, it's very, very unlikely. But just on the off chance that, you know, my children should decide to sell the condominium when I die, and let's say she'd be left without a place to live.
William, you got to be more proactive on this, if I may say so. You know, I've been practicing law 49 years. The last 30, I have been a deputy DA for San Mateo County in the Consumer Protection Unit. I'm a real consumer advocate. Listen. If you want to protect your wife, go see, in my opinion, a certified specialist in estate planning. What community do you live in?
I live in San Francisco.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, did you get the number for the Board of Legal Specialization?
Is that 415-538-2100?
That's right. You know, I really feel, with your concern, you need to do it.
Okay.
You need to sit down with an attorney and figure out ahead of time what you want to do. Have you given a lot of thought? When was the last time you prepared? When was it that you prepared your living trust? What year?
Well, I would say about 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, if you want to make a contribution to the station, and I'm not being facetious, and kind of educate yourself before you go see a lawyer, which I think is crucial, make a contribution to KLW for $120 and ask for us to send you a copy of NOLA's Estate Planning Basics.
Yeah.
No, I'm serious. Okay.
Well, no, I understand you're serious. Actually, I'm one of those people who gives a monthly donation.
Do you? You're a good guy. You're one of our angels. You're one of our angels, William, but as an angel.
As a result, I'm not entitled to any of the gifts.
Well, too bad, my friend. Too bad. Well, hey, you can make another donation. You can make another donation. But what I think is really crucial here for you is you really need to be more active and make an appointment with an estate planning attorney, preferably a certified specialist, and sit down and figure out what it is you really want to do and have the help of an attorney. And good luck to you.
Okay, thank you.
And
tell
your wife that we're on her side, will you?
Oh, yeah. Don't worry, I'm on her side too.
Yeah. Okay, I know you are. Take care. Nice to talk to you. Hi, Joe. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I have two unrelated questions. I don't know if we'll have time for both. So one question is that we did a living trust when we only had two children. Subsequently, we had twins. And being that it's so hectic, we haven't updated that living trust. It only mentions two children.
How old are the twins, Joe?
They're 18 now. They just
18 years old? Hey, you guys are really moving fast on this.
So I've been told that the living trust applies to all children, even if they're not mentioned. But now they're not minors, that's who. So do we have to hurry up and do something, or what?
And, you know, it depends on what the language in the trust says. It may just divide your trust assets in equal shares to all of the children that are living at that time. So it may be that you don't need to have the children listed. Yeah. On the other hand, it may say that Sam gets so much and Jennifer gets so much, and then you do have a problem.
You
so
know,
you need
Joe,
to look at it.
At that, do you and your husband have much of an estate?
Well, we have a house. We have... some stock. I'll have a retirement fund.
Well, hey, you got a nice estate. As I was just telling William, I'm a great believer in people educating themselves and getting help.
Yeah.
At this point, you really need to get some help from, in my opinion, a certified specialist in estate planning.
Okay.
And figure out, because, you know, here the kids now, the twins are now 18 years old. You need to not wait another 10 or 20 years. You need to get going.
Chuck, the good thing about Joe's situation is that if the twins are 18, she doesn't have to worry about naming guardians for them.
Well, that's right. I take it, and are they good kids, Joe?
Well, they're about to go off to college.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's good to hear. Well,
she
hey,
had a second
listen.
Question.
Yeah. Go ahead. What was it? Yeah.
So meanwhile, the children of a close friend have asked me to be her executor. She's older than I am and has some health issues. Mm-hmm. So she has three children, and two of them asked me to be the executor because there's some problems among the children. So I wonder, am I stepping into a hornet's nest?
Does she have an attorney?
Pardon?
Does she have an attorney?
Not really, because
another issue
came up with her recently.
Yeah.
About a tenant issue, and she really didn't have anybody. So I wonder, should I sidestep it because there's already some, you know, rivalries between the children, and it's kind of a recipe, no-win recipe.
Well, you're not a lawyer, are you?
No.
No.
That's with a lawyer.
I think does your friend have a decent estate?
Yes.
Yeah, I think you're going to be biting into something that you might find overwhelming myself. But David, what thoughts do you have for me?
I agree that if you're not prepared for dealing with this and putting a lot of energy and effort into it and a lot of emotional effort into it, then it's probably more than you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, Joe, you need to be very careful about this because you may find it overwhelming. You do not have knowledge of the law. And this is a really complicated area. And if your friend has a large estate and there are kids, you may wish you had never agreed to do this.
To be an executor.
Yeah.
But couldn't I just hire, as an executor, couldn't I hire the CPA and the lawyer and the and the this and the that to take care of things?
Joe, if you're appointed executor, you would be appointed by the court. If you were a trustee, of course, the trust could name you as a successor trustee, and you wouldn't necessarily have to go to court to get any authority. But to become an executor, you must be appointed by the Superior Court in the county where your friend lived at the time of her death.
Even though they name you in their will as the executor?
Well, that's correct. See, you are nominated.
Yeah, you don't have
you're
to accept,
nominated. But,
Joe.
But also, even a nomination, I mean, you could be turned down by the court.
Yeah, that's true.
The children might come and oppose you even.
Yeah.
But the court would give great preference to you to serve if your friend had named you in the will or had nominated you, but only the court can actually make you an executor.
Yeah. So they might look at my credentials anyway and say, well, this person isn't qualified, really.
Well, possibly. I mean, you don't have to be. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. You would have the right to hire the lawyer, to hire the CPA, if you're willing to undertake the task. You would be entitled to a fee. Often, if it's a close friend or a close family, you might want to waive the fee or reduce it. But the probate fee in our law is set by statute at essentially 7% of the first $200,000 of the estate as it is appraised, and 2% of each 2% of the next $800,000 up to $1 million.
2% of the next $800,000?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the reality is I can't even deal with my own estate, let alone...
Well, okay.
Maybe that's the best indication.
I think you know,
obviously.
Joe. I think you now know the answer. You just gave it.
Yeah.
Good luck to you, my dear.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I don't want to have a downer for everybody, but some months ago, and I forget how I found out about this, there's an excellent book, which I think... I would recommend to you, since we're doing this program on estate planning, and unfortunately, we just don't have enough time. I wish this program was 3 hours long, and then we could do some real justice to this. But there's a relatively new book out. It's in paperback called Changing the Way We Die. And it's the compassionate end of life care and the hospice movement. It's, again, entitled Changing the Way We Die. It's published by Viva, V-I-V-A, Editions. It's written by Fran Smith and Sheila Himmel. They are journalists. It's very, very well done. I'm very impressed with the book. And if you would like to educate yourself, whether you are someone who feels that maybe at someday you may need hospice, or if you're the child of someone who is getting on in age and you'd like to learn something about to help your parent, I highly recommend it. By the way, I do want to mention again the magic number, which, by the way, we'll do Call a Lawyer Night next week, and that's 1-800-525-9917. The magic number also for what KLW is doing is also, believe it or not, 1-800-525-9917. I hope you will take that very seriously. And let me see, who do we have now? We've got Joanne. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you for being there.
Sure.
Mine is not writing estate. My estate is written. My son has copies. Everything is straightforward. Mine is about being the secondary trust of an estate, which was written by my father. Who named his second wife the primary trustee and the executor, the administrator. And in the last 6 years, we have not been able to get anything in the way of accounting response. It took us 2 years before that to take the estate. Nothing. Well, once I spent about $3,000, $4,000 with my attorney getting him to write letters to her attorney, and it hasn't worked. And I wonder, my understanding is in California, there's really nothing you can do about that.
Let me get some comments, Joanne, for you.
Yeah.
Because we're getting close to the end of the program.
No.
So if you
That's
don't.
That's the whole question.
If you don't mind, take the answer from your radio.
I'd love to.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling, by the way. Go ahead.
Well, very briefly, Joanne, under our trust law, if you are a beneficiary of a trust under administration, now, is Dad still alive? I wasn't sure about that.
I'm sorry. I think she's gone.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
So yes or no. Say yes, he is or he isn't.
Well, that's okay. Assume that the trust is now being administered by a successor trustee, and you are a beneficiary. You have rights under California trust law to information about the trust, including an accounting. You can demand an accounting, or at the very least, information about the receipts and the expenditures of the trustee. And the failure of the trustee to produce that information can allow you to petition the court to remove the trustee and replace the trustee. Now, that's heavy litigation stuff. It's expensive work. You do, of course, need an attorney for it, someone who does trust and estate litigation.
Okay, I hope that is helpful to you, Joanne. And also, I think in terms of my thinking about educating yourself, I highly recommend to you trying to get a copy of the NOLO Estate Planning Basics. You can go into your local library. It should be in the consumer section if you want to, and educate yourself that way if you don't feel you want to get your own copy. But I think that's very good. I think we are nearly at the end of the program. And I want to thank you both very much for joining us. I wish we had at least another hour to spend on this. Thank you very much for joining us here on Your Legal Rights. My two great supporters of this program, David Hellman, certified specialist in estate planning and taxation law, and great supporter Peter Stern, certified specialist in estate planning. Thank you both very much.
Oh, you're welcome, Chuck.
Most welcome.
It's always a pleasure having you here. And David, we will see you on October 22nd for our issues about preparing your 2014 tax return.
That's correct.
Ooh, that's scary. All right. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Additional funding for this program is made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. And next week, I want you to know that the topic on the air will be scams targeting older persons and also victimizing younger persons. We'll also talk about identity theft. My guest will be Jay White, pro bono emeritus attorney with the Legal Aid Society of San Mateo County. Thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney.